This is work done with my advisor, George Candea, at TPFL in Switzerland. Right. We want to enable programs to test themselves, and as was mentioned, with a special focus on smartphones. And the way we imagine this to happen is as follows. Programs record interaction traces, and these traces describe how the user interacted with the app. Then these traces get modified, and new interaction traces are generated. These, you can think of them as tests. And then we run these tests against the application, and if the application crashes, then the user is asked to share this interaction trace that caused the application to crash with the developers. Now, this means that the developers can replay the interaction trace and understand what caused the program to crash. However, there is one obvious concern with this system, and the concern is user anonymity. And this is the topic of my talk. So the question is, what user would intentionally share their private information contained in an interaction trace with the developers or anybody else? None, obviously. However, we think that replaying bugs and user anonymity are not mutually exclusive. So we built a development framework called Remote. What Remote does is enable programs developed using it to enable users to anonymously report buggy program executions. And now developers can replay these buggy executions and understand what causes the bug. So in this presentation, I will tell you how Remote protects the user's anonymity. And our solution, our key idea, is to provide users with key anonymity. And this is a guarantee that an interaction trace can at most identify the user who generated that trace as being part of a group of key indistinguishable users. What this means is that the trace contains no information that is specific to the user who generated it, to a single user. Said differently, a trace provides key anonymity if k different users interacted with the program in the same way, if k different programs recorded the same interaction trace. So we want Remote to tell users what's the key anonymity it can provide for their trace. So in the rest of the talk, I will describe in more details interaction traces. Then I will show you how Remote protects the user's anonymity against two identification mechanisms. Then I will go through some evaluation, and finally, I will conclude. So an interaction trace is a sequence of events that determines a program's execution. And we assume that programs are deterministic with respect to the events in a trace. And what I mean by this is that if we replay the events in the trace one after the other, then we consistently replay a recorded program execution. Now let me give you an example of how Remote records interaction traces and what these traces contain. So say I developed using Remote a smartphone Android application that tells users what is their body mass index, their BMI. Here's how a normal interaction with the app would look like. So upon startup, the app checks the user's location to display them some relevant ads. Developers have to make a living. So, Remote records that the app asked for the GPS coordinates, records the values of these coordinates, and records the network communication that the app does in order to retrieve the ads. Now the user happily fills in their date of birth, gender, height, weight, and finally they press on the What's My BMI button. At this point, the app computes the age of the user and uses some formula to give them the result, and possibly a verdict. So Remote records what buttons the user pressed and what values the user input into the field. So this is an interaction trace. It contains the interaction between the user and the program, and between the program and its environment. Remote saves the traces locally on the user's device. If we take a closer look at interaction traces, we can see that it contains two types of events. First, we have reactive events, which are shown in yellow, and these events provide program inputs. The problem is that one can identify users based on these inputs. And to give you an example, previous research has shown that the tuple date of birth, gender, and location uniquely identifies a person. At least this is true in some US states. So this is how we can identify users based on the program inputs they provide. The second type of events are proactive events. These events cause the application to react, to do something, to run a computation or talk to a server. These events are shown in violet, and they too can be used to identify users. Due to lack of time, I'll skip the example, but you can find one in the paper. The key idea is that we want remote to protect users' anonymity against both of these identification mechanisms. And let me begin by telling you how remote deals with program inputs. So a reactive event represents feeding an input to a program. Let's say you're running the program on this slide with date of birth, June 19, 1982. Now, it's possible to give the program a different input, but have the program follow the same execution path. The condition is for the new input to enable the program to make the same decisions as it did with the old input. And this is the case if we run the program with a new date of birth as January 7, 1983. The program behaves the same, it takes the same if branches. So we say that these inputs are alternatives to each other. So if a bug experiences, a program experiences a bug with the first input, it will experience the bug with the second input as well. So to find all alternative inputs, remote uses a well-known dynamic program analysis technique called concolic execution. And the way this technique is used by remote is as follows. Remote replays an interaction trace inside a concolic execution engine and then gathers the constraints that the program places on its inputs. For example, that the date of birth must be between June 29, 1973 and June 29, 1993. The program behaves the same way with any date of birth in this interval. So exact date of birth is not needed in the trace to reproduce the bug. So by using this technique, remote is able to replace the private information from a trace with the collected constraints, and thus it protects the user's anonymity. Now remember that for a trace to provide k anonymity, k different users must have interacted with the program in the same way. K different programs must have recorded the same interaction trace. So let's see how remote computes their number. The setting is the following. The programs using remote form a distributed database of interaction traces, and programs communicate with each other by using the remote hive, which is a third-party service. Now, I want to emphasize that we are paranoid with anonymity. We don't want to trust anyone else but the user's program with the user's private data. And what this means is that we don't trust the remote hive nor the other programs running remote to behave correctly. They could be compromised for all we know. So this raises a challenge. And the challenge is, how can a program compute how many other programs recorded the same trace as it did without telling them which is the trace in question? Our solution is the following. The inquiring program, shown in green, sends to the remote hive a set of traces, not just the trace whose key anonymity it wishes to compute. The other traces serve as noise, so one cannot know which is the exact trace that the program is interested in. Now, the hive forwards this set to all the other remote programs, and these programs check if their database of interaction traces contains any of the set of the traces they received from the hive. If so, then they reply with one, otherwise they reply with zero. The hive sums up the responses and forwards the result to the inquiring program. The green program, who initiated the counting, transforms the result into a value for k, and it does this by taking into account the probability that a program replied positively because it recorded a trace of interest, or because it recorded one of the traces that was supposed to act as noise. So this is how remote computes how many programs recorded the same interaction trace without divulging the trace to them. So we implemented a prototype of remote for Android applications, and for the evaluation, we modified Pocket Campus to use remote. Pocket Campus is an Android application targeted at my university's students, staff, and visitors. One possible situation in which remote cannot provide users with key anonymity is if each user causes the program to generate constraints that are unique to that user. So we set out to test this hypothesis. I'll focus on one Pocket Campus functionality, that of checking one's account balance. So to do this, one taps on the CamiPro icon, inputs their username and password, and taps on the login button. At this point, Pocket Campus makes a server request and retrieves the account balance. So we were interested in seeing whether this account balance is processed by Pocket Campus in any way that is specific to the user who logged in. The account balance is a data structure that has 7 fields, and we used the Concolic execution engine from remote to compute how many alternatives there are for each field. So here are the results. One of these fields, shown as a green box, is not processed by Pocket Campus, and this means that remote can generate an unbounded number of alternatives to it. Next, there are 3 fields for which remote can generate at least 100 alternatives and are shown as blue boxes. Finally, there are 3 fields for which remote cannot generate any alternatives, and I'm showing them here as red boxes. So at first blush, it seems like these fields are specific to the user, which will prevent remote from providing the user with anonymity. However, they are not, and let me explain why. 2 of these fields contain floating point values, which our Concolic execution engine doesn't currently support. However, if it did, it would generate at least 100 alternatives. The last field corresponds to the Pocket Campus server status. And Pocket Campus checks this value against a predefined value to make sure that the server replied in good health. So because of this, remote cannot generate any alternatives. However, since the same status code will be encountered by all Pocket Campus users, this field is not particular to the user. So we can see that Pocket Campus does not process the account balance in any way that it identifies the user who logged in. And this means that remote will be able to provide users with key anonymity. So in summary, our goal is to enable users to submit interaction traces as bug reports without compromising their anonymity. To this end, we aim to make sure that a trace can at most identify a user as being one of K possible users. We achieve this by expunging personally identifiable information from the trace and ensuring that the trace was recorded by at least K different programs. Thank you for your attention, and I'll gladly take your questions.
Hey, thanks for this great talk and nice work. Just a question, do you maybe have a notion of the resource requirements of this approach? Like, you need probably to record the traces for each application, and that probably will consume energy and battery on the device as well.
So we evaluated the time overhead, and it's around 10 milliseconds for each click, so that's how much it takes additionally to handling the click to record the click.
Okay, and maybe the transfer from the data to the server for you, for the users?
We did not evaluate that part.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I guess I have a very similar question in terms of network communication overhead, because it seems that each mobile would have to reply to all requests from all the other mobiles. And in order for this approach to work, you really need a big network.
Yes.
Because otherwise you won't get any anonymity. So
right, but the reply can be a one bit, right? Actually, one bit. True or yes or no.
But you need to send all the traces.
So you're saying when the Hive sends the traces?
Yes. So each mobile, the Hive would send all the traces for each mobile that has an error.
Right. I mean, one can think of ways in which not all the time your app participates in this crowdsourcing in order to balance traffic. So that I can imagine schemes in which you set up a maximum network communication, and then the app doesn't reply, just logs out from the system. Exactly, when you're connected to Wi-Fi. Yeah.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and how does your location impact your mass index?
Sorry?
How does your location, in your example, you had a GPS location?
Yes.
And it was an application for calculating your mass
yes.
index.
So why do we need that? In my example, because as it was during the keynote today, you want to show ads to people, right? Because it's a free app and, right, I don't know, you're close to Westfield and you want to show people, okay, go buy something from Armani.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so this concludes our session, so thank you.
Thank you.